No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome back to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, a USA Today wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. On the line I have with me is Seth Cox, the officially the big boss man over at RevengeOfTheBirds.com. How are you doing tonight, Seth?
Good, Jess. How are you?
We're doing great. And, you know, we're just a couple of days. We're recording on a Wednesday night. We've just seen the NFL Network's Top 100 show. We have a couple more reveals there. And we're just a couple of days away from All or Nothing, the release of All or Nothing, the big video series, the NFL, Amazon, and pretty much everyone is pushing to extremes. And, you know, it's intriguing for me, but I'm ready to see it. How about you?
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be fun to watch, which will be, you know, entertaining. Not sure what you're going to do over at CardsWire. We're going to have an enjoyable time doing a episode a day review type thing. So, you know, hopefully not too many spoilers. Not that there can be like a ton of spoilers, but you know, try to.
There's a bunch out there, really. There's a bunch. I mean, aside from, guess what? We know how the season went. They won against Green Bay, and they lost against Carolina. And what I'm really interested in is some of the off the field or the locker room things, just how they interact. Now, the stuff off the field, that's kind of cool. I'm interested in seeing that. But more, if anything, I'd love to see some of I can't wait to see the draft day one where the Cardinals already filmed it. The whole Amir Abdullah, Marcus Gold, and David Johnson thing where I can't wait to see the frustration in Steve Keim. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. And I think overall it's just going to be a lot of fun to see the Cardinals, you know, kind of in the spotlight. You know, you're going to end up with a look at the Cardinals that we've never – you know, seen before in terms of any access for any team. And so, you know, that's going to be enjoyable and that'll be fun to watch. And then, we'll ignore the ending.
Well, tonight's topic, if you're listening, we're saying tonight because we're recording on a Wednesday night. So this edition's topics are basically two. We're going to talk about the top 100. The Cardinals have six players in total, and the last two were revealed with Patrick Peterson and Carson Palmer being revealed in the top 20. Patrick Peterson coming to number 18 and Carson Palmer number 12. We're going to discuss a little bit about that. And then after that, this is our ranking the NFC West edition. We're going to talk about the NFC West, and we're going to go position by position, and we're going to rank each position group, their situation, talking about 2016 alone, how we would rank each position group that way. So it's basically a couple of topics. We're going to talk top 100. We're going to talk about ranking the NFC West. We're 1 month away from the start of training camp, and so I'm thinking as things come up, I wasn't sure if we're going to have another show. I'm pretty sure we'll find a way to talk about the All or Nothing series maybe next week. Or the week after. I will be out of town, but I can podcast from anywhere as long as I have an internet connection that works. And then sometime before the beginning of training camp, we will talk about, you know, training camp roster battles, bubble players, salary cap casualties, and all that sort of stuff. So let's go get started, and let's talk top 100. So the Cardinals have six players total, rounding it up. We assume that there are no more, because Patrick Peterson and Carson Palmer rounded that out. I can't imagine there'd be anybody else that cracks the top 10, David Johnson included, as good as he was. So we have the six players rounded out. Number 71, Calais Campbell. Number 48, Chandler Jones. Number 28, Tyrann Mathieu. 27, Larry Fitzgerald. Number 18, revealed on the special on Wednesday night, Patrick Peterson. And number 12, Carson Palmer. We'll talk basically about Peterson and Palmer. But initially, I was tweeting this kind of – the first shock was – and we kind of thought last week when we talked that Palmer would probably – if he was in and he deserved to be in the top 20 based on the year he had, he probably would have been near 20. That wasn't the case. How surprised were you when Peterson was revealed before Palmer?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I mean, and it's not that Palmer's play didn't deserve it, but it, as we talked about last week, it was just a huge jump and something that you just don't normally see in terms of how these things work. And so, you know, I'm happy. I mean, I'm not going to complain about it. And like I said, if there was ever a year that Palmer deserved it, it was last year. And I think the fact that it happened, you know, after the injury and whatnot, it makes it even better because he was probably on his way to being a top 30 to 40 player. And he ends up, you know, getting into the teens, or not even the teens, getting into the top 12 in the NFL. And, you know, it was kind of a culmination of what was the apex of his career so far. And obviously Cardinals fans hope there's one last chapter to that career. So, but so far, I mean, I don't think anybody can deny it's been the highlight of what has been a good, bad, and indifferent career for one Carson Palmer.
And for me, the surprise wasn't – there was some surprise that it was Peterson revealed first. But the way players value quarterbacks didn't completely surprise me. Now, the part of the Palmer's ranking that was shocking to me, and this coming from, you know, I admittedly can be a homer for the Cardinals. I try my best to keep myself level-headed. But I love to see this. But the fact that Russell Wilson – was five spots behind Palmer is puzzling because and I think, you know, Russell Wilson comes in number 17 and I tweet out, wait, what? Not only is Palmer ahead of Patrick Peterson, he's ahead of Russell Wilson. And it wasn't just by one or two, it was five whole slots. And I guess my perspective on the potential of Palmer ahead of Wilson. Now, even Tyrann Mathieu on Wilson's sort of in honor in the reveal talked about how it's just Tyrann Mathieu himself said it's really somewhat disrespectful if you don't put Russell Wilson in the top five in the entire league because he's like a magician. And I personally thought Russell Wilson would be up there in the talk for the top player in the NFL. The numbers show it, and he's had the longevity doing it. But I guess it just goes to show that even players around the league still kind of buy into the narrative, I think, that he's not asked to do as much as other quote-unquote traditional quarterbacks. And I think that shows because Carson Palmer, who was washed up in a journeyman essentially since 2009, according to most people around the league, he has one just ginormous career year, and they vault him almost into the top 10. The talent, there's nothing to doubt about the talent of Palmer. That's why he was the number one draft pick overall. And he's become exactly the type of player that people hoped he could have been. And really he should have been through his career if he hadn't torn his ACL, for the first time. But I think it just shows how there's still a little bit of wait and see when it comes to Russell Wilson.
Yeah. And that, I mean, we see it all the time on, you know, Revenge of the Birds, and you'll see it, you know, again on CardsWire. Anytime you bring up quarterback rankings, and
brings out the hot take.
Yeah, and it brings out the hot takes of what fans, and especially Cardinals fans think of one, Russell Wilson. And I'm not going to argue because it's not, you know, it's not that big of a deal to me. So, but it's just interesting to me that that's how, you know, how Cardinals fans see Russell Wilson. You know, I am kind of like you. I think he's magic for that offense and what he does. And I always, this is what I always, how I always view a player, and this is just me, you know, take it or leave it. But I ask myself, if I took Carson Palmer and I took Russell Wilson and I just flipped teams, nothing else but just the quarterback situation, what team am I picking to be better tomorrow? And that's how I look at it. And, you know, that's not a shot at Palmer. I thought Palmer played better last year, so I can understand the higher ranking. I thought Palmer played more consistently last year, so I understand the higher ranking. But Russell Wilson's highs were higher during the year. So, but, you know, if you told me that tomorrow the Cardinals and the Seahawks made a trade straight up, Wilson for Palmer, I think the Cardinals got the better end of the deal, even if it's just for 1 year.
Exactly. I would agree the same thing. And for me, Russell Wilson, if he were put in an Arian system, would be every bit as successful as Carson Palmer. Now, the whole height thing is against him. That's just a Bruce Arians thing. Obviously, he's shown he can overcome the height issue. He's every bit as bright. I believe he can make reads. And the fact that he is so elusive makes him that much better because he can extend plays. I think he would be every bit as good in a Bruce Arians offense as he is in the Seattle offense, which is, you know, kind of protects him a little more. But that's not even necessarily true. Look at the passing numbers. Last year was a 4,000 passing year. He was a few hundred yards behind Palmer. He had almost as many touchdowns. He was fantastic. I mean, and the numbers in the pocket even showed that he was one of the best. So, you know, I've been a Russell Wilson fan since, and it's, you know, aside from him being a little bit annoying with how little he shows other than those canned cliches, and Palmer's kind of the same way, but he does seem to crack open the door a little bit and to see who he is and talking about the ins and outs and the technical stuff of football. I think it's just the fact that Russell Wilson plays for the Seahawks, and I just can't stand them.
Right, and I think for a lot of people, you know, anybody that's a NFC fan basically for the last 3 years, I mean, heck, even 4 years, if you want to go back to his rookie year, you know, that's been the case. And now, you know, and there is, you know, another segment that doesn't like his personality because they call, you know, you see that
seems fake.
And he gets called corny and fake, and, you know, the memes about when he's wearing his Hawaiian shirt and, you know, and dad shoes, you know, and his teammates are wearing tank tops and, you know, beanies and things like that. And everybody, you know, the memes are out of control and hilarious. You should find them. But it just goes to show, like, being great doesn't necessarily make you liked. I mean, we see it with LeBron James in a different, you know, way. We see it with Tom Brady, you know, and stuff like that. And so, and then there reaches a point, and we saw it this year with Stephen Curry in basketball, there reaches a point where you are so good and or there's so little to dislike about you that's what makes people dislike about you. Dislike you.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think that's where Russell Wilson is, honestly. Like, Stephen Curry and Russell Wilson are in that kind of same trajectory where, you know, the fact that Steph Curry was a unanimous MVP and almost won 2 championships in a row, you know, he gets beat up the same way that Russell Wilson gets beat up, having the Seahawks on the doorstep of a second Super Bowl. Meanwhile, you know, us poor Cardinals fans are sitting here going, hopefully, you know, this is the year, right? This is the year. And the Seahawks were on the doorstep of back-to-back, so.
Now, what do you think about Now, the other interesting thing is now, again, being on the fan side of me, I was very satisfied to see that Patrick Peterson was rated ahead of Richard Sherman. However, he was not rated ahead of Josh Norman, who came in at number 11. Cornerback from Carolina, let go, and now signed with the Washington Redskins. I don't know what to think about that one. Now, you look at the statistics with the interceptions. Obviously, Josh Norman had the better season. But there is really, I mean, it's hard to look at Patrick Peterson and not look at, yeah, that guy is exactly what you want in a cornerback. And I'm not sure if I had to pick a cornerback to have him on my defense, I think I would still take Peterson over Norman. And we're going to kind of say, I think we're going to see that dynamic. We'll kind of see how that goes this year. How Norman does in a different defensive system, since, you know, really the Carolina one is a much more zone based, and Patrick Peterson, he is left on his own a lot. And the Cardinals scheme for that, they want their corners playing press man, and they want to be able to put pressure inside of the quarterback, which means they have to rely on their defensive backs. I personally think Patrick Peterson is the better player. But at the same time, and you look at the numbers they had, and that, you know, interceptions are still a sexy number. And, you know, Josh Norman had a bucket load of them.
Well, and I think it goes back to what we just talked about. What did you do for me in 2015? 2015, Josh Norman was put up sexier stats.
Yeah.
Same way Carson Palmer did it over Russell Wilson. But if, again, I think if you're saying who would I take now and going forward, I don't think you'd get many people that'd be like arguing over, you know, Josh Norman. Peterson's younger, bigger, more athletic, and has done it over a longer period of time.
And the fact that Carolina revoked the franchise, his team, the team that knows him best, was willing to let him walk.
Exactly. So, and you know, that I think that all speaks to the entirety of it. So, you know, I just think it's an interesting way to look at it. You know, here's what I'll say. I don't think that there's any reason as a Cardinals fan to be upset. Like, who cares? Like, you know, I don't think there's any reason to care that Josh Norman was ranked above. And if anything, just say it balanced itself out, because the fact that he, you know, that Palmer probably shouldn't have been ranked over Wilson, and Peterson probably shouldn't have been ranked below Norman. So it evens itself out overall.
And bottom line, what the Cardinals have are six players considered the among the very best in the NFL. Not a bad deal moving forward. So let's wrap that up. And coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, I almost did it again. So coming up on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, we're going to talk the NFC West. We're going to go through the different positions and kind of rank them by team and give our, you know, this is a good offseason post ranking the NFC West. So back on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about the different positions. Who's the best? Who's the worst? Welcome back to the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, and we're getting ready to rank the NFC West. We're going to talk about every position group, starting at quarterback, going all the way to the specialists, and even the coaching staffs, or the coaches, head coaches specifically, and we're going to go through and kind of give our rankings. Now, Seth and I have not talked about this ahead of time, so who knows, we might see some similarities, and we might be very different, so hopefully we get a little bit of debate going. And so let's talk about that now. So let's look at the NFC West. Let's talk about the quarterback position. How would you rank the NFC West from team to team? Now, the way I'm looking at it is, how does it look for 2016? And it's not just the starting quarterback, but the two, you know, their quarterback situation for this season.
I think it goes back to what we talked about. Overall, Wilson's been healthier. The backup situation in Seattle sucks, but I do like Trevon Boykin if he makes the team. So there's that. But overall, I mean, if you're making me take one and two, I'm probably going to take Arizona, but if we're just doing head up Palmer or Wilson, I'll take Seattle. But at you know, by my wishy-washiness, you can tell it's basically splitting hairs. Like, I'm not going to get – I think in this case, it's a flip a coin at 1 and 2. And, you know, then at 3 and 4, that's where the discussion really gets interesting, because I think you can make a case that 3 and 4 is the same exact thing that we're talking about with 1 and 2. We have no idea how Colin Kaepernick or Blaine Gabbert are going to fit in Chip Kelly's offense. And obviously we have no idea about Jared Goff in the NFL. So that's, you know, kind of where we are left when it comes to this whole thing. It, you know, gun to my head, if we're ranking, you know, just say top two, I'm going to go probably Cardinals, Seahawks. Then I'll probably say 49ers, only because I know how manageable Blaine Gabbert is, but I also know how high Colin Kaepernick can go, whereas we literally have no idea with Jared Goff.
Well, and that's the same order I went. Cardinals, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles. I saw Russell Wilson and Carson Palmer in 2016 as equals. I wouldn't necessarily, if you're looking at 2016, neither one nor the other would I necessarily say is better. Where Cardinals have a clear advantage is if they're number two. You know, I don't know much about Trevon Boykin, but when you have a
he's undrafted. How you have to look at it.
And then a guy in Jake Heaps behind him that you know no one's ever heard of. And you could have argued Tavares Jackson, they were going to have in their back pocket, but after the whole gun incident and allegedly, you know, threatened his wife and she said, go ahead and better be accurate because you're not on the field. I don't think – that weirdest story of the offseason, I think, bar none. But, you know, I think Kirk Tavares Jackson is officially out of the running for backup there for Seattle. So, and I think because that we know that Drew Stanton is a known commodity and a manageable commodity as a backup, that he's not going to he's you know, as we saw, he's not necessarily going to win you games, but he's not going to lose you games either. So he's a capable backup while we don't know about that. So I think that gives Arizona definitely a step up for 2016. Now, if we're talking long term, clearly the quarterback situation with Russell Wilson there is the top. And I take San Francisco over Los Angeles simply because now Blaine Gabbert, like you said, manageable. As a best case scenario, I could see him as a lesser Alex Smith. I didn't know that much about other than he was terrible before San Francisco and watching him play. He plays like Alex Smith. Not quite as efficiently, not quite as effectively. And the Colin Kaepernick, I just can't believe that he is that bad. And I think the same thing about Robert Griffin, RG3. The guys that we've seen them perform at the highest level, you know, at top of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, it's got to still be in there. And I think of those four guys between San Francisco and Los Angeles, Kaepernick, Gabbert, Keenum, and Jared Goff, clearly Kaepernick is the most talented, in my opinion. And so I would take Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick every day of the week over Case Keenum and Blaine and Jared Goff, simply because, one, we know nothing about Jared Goff. And the fact, some people, it's like, I'm not convinced that Jared Goff's going to be able to do it at the next level. And Case Keenum, eh. So San Francisco over Los Angeles, we'll talk about this in a year, and maybe Goff has some promise.
Right, and here's what could be crazy, and, you know, obviously, as Cardinals fans, we hope this is not true at all, but here's what could be crazy. There is a scenario where the Cardinals could be at the bottom of this rankings when we do this time next year. Me and sunny Chicago and you melting in Arizona, but that's another conversation for another day. But, I mean, like you just said, Jared Goff could light the world on fire. I don't I don't see it happening, but he could. There's a reason he was the number one pick. Whether or not I agree with it doesn't matter. Whether or not you agree with it doesn't matter. There's a reason he was the number one pick. You know, like you said, we've seen the highs of Colin Kaepernick. I mean, he's gotten a team further than Carson Palmer ever has. So whether or not, you know, no matter how you want to fight that battle, that's a factual statement there. But, you know, and there is a reality and a chance that the Cardinals, you know, could either one be without Carson Palmer next year. Hopefully this is the scenario because he rides off into the sunset after a Super Bowl win. Or the other scenario is that his play just diminishes slightly enough to make this a conversation, which is crazy to me to think, because I think the only guarantee next year, when you look at it, is Russell Wilson will be one of the top two guys.
Right. Now, that interesting fun thing that I kind of tweeted out, and if we're looking at quarterbacks, if you had to pick an NFC West quarterback, a playoff tested NFC West quarterback to lead your team, who would it be? Now, the question is, now naturally you'd want to pick the guy that didn't throw four interceptions in an NFC championship game, right? Well, then you'd be taking Colin Kaepernick because
exactly.
People forget Russell Wilson did it the year before, only their team won magically somehow because they're magicians again.
They are.
Pete Carroll is Satan himself, I think.
Exactly. So I think with the quarterbacks, there's not like a ton of question this year in terms of preseason rankings. I think the question becomes, you know, how much does this change in 2016-17 offseason.
Let's talk about the running back position. This is an interesting one here. I actually just published it this afternoon, Wednesday afternoon on CardsWire. I actually have to kind of take a look at it a little bit differently. I went into, and I'm looking kind of like the rotation of what the running backs will be. I went Rams first, Cardinals second, Seahawks third, and San Francisco fourth. Now, on the whole, this is a very talented division with running backs. But I went with Los Angeles first on this basis. And there's a fact I forgot about. I either did not remember hearing, seeing, or just completely forgot. One of the two. Todd Gurley, everyone thinks is a generational back. The fact that in his first year he was a top 30 player, and everyone, players included, rave about this kid. He's already predicted to be the top rusher for 2016. But I had Trey Mason behind him. But Trey Mason is having some legal issues. I hadn't remembered or heard that. So
me neither.
Probably, yeah, he's on the rest. He hadn't practiced with the team. So it looks like maybe it's Benny Cunningham behind him. For that might make it different for me as who's got the better running back situation, because while I love David Johnson, I think you have to look at Todd Gurley as definitely the better talent. And he's going to get the better usage in that offense. But if you go, you know, if you have Todd Gurley and Trey Mason, who showed promise as a starting running back his rookie year, so you have to like the young balance they have for the 1-2 punch for a season. But take Trey Mason out. You'll have Benny Cunningham. And now you've got David Johnson and Chris Johnson with, you know, every once in a while some dynamic flash of Andre Ellington. I'm not sure if I would keep Arizona below Los Angeles without Trey Mason. So I go right now, that's my initial rankings were with the Rams over the Cardinals. But if we're swapping Trey Mason and Benny Cunningham, I think I like the combo of Johnson and Johnson better than I like Gurley and Cunningham. And then I go Seattle over San Francisco. Although I don't know, Thomas Rawls, he was fantastic last year, but coming off the ankle injury and the fact they drafted a couple of running backs really makes you take pause to see whether or not they think he can repeat what he did. So there's no Marshawn Lynch. We don't know how Rawls is going to come back. Now, CJ Procise looks like a David Johnson clone, as you've mentioned and we talked about on the show leading up to the draft. So that's kind of a scary proposition there for that running offense. While San Francisco, they've got Carlos Hyde, and they've got an offense that's run-friendly as well. So I could flip-flop Rams and Cardinals, and I could flip-flop Seahawks in San Francisco.
Yeah, and I don't think you can argue any of that. again, do the Cardinals have the best running back in the division? Probably not. Probably the Rams, but you go down to 2 and 3, and I think it becomes clearly the Cardinals. And to add to your point, if we knew the health of Thomas Rawls, I would even rank them over the St. Louis Rams, because their 1 and 2 situation would be better than the Rams' 1 and 2 situation. So that, you know, that would be the only reason why. But since Rawls is coming off a serious injury, I think, you know, and I'm trying to see if they drafted anybody, because I don't pay enough attention to depth charts for teams like the St. Louis Rams, or the Los Angeles Rams, excuse me. I'm going to do that. You're going to do Revenge of the Birds. I'm going to do that all season, so it'll be fine. But no, so I mean, yeah, I mean Gurley, Cunningham, a guy named Chase Reynolds, I'm pretty sure that's a fake name. Malcolm Brown's not bad, but I mean, he's an undrafted free agent.
I saw the list of running backs on their site, and I was like, who?
Yeah, Zach Lasky, that's a fake name. Terrence McGee, that's not a real name either. Aaron Green was the running back who made the fantastic catch for TCU in the come-from-behind win over Texas Tech. If you don't remember that play, Josh Doxson knocked the ball up in the air on the last play of the game, and Aaron Green was in the back of the end zone and caught it. So there's your Aaron Green fact of the day. But that entire depth chart is what I would call awful.
And in fairness, they don't. They won't need it as long as Gurley's healthy.
But again, if we're doing the depth chart overall, I prefer Seattle's depth chart over St. Louis. I mean, like I said, it's similar to the quarterback situation. I would take Russell Wilson over everybody in the division, but if you're making me take a depth chart, I'm going to take Arizona. In the same vein, I'm, you know, like you had Arizona ranked 1, I'm going to agree with you. I would almost rank Seattle 2 because of ProSize, Alex Collins, and Christine Michael. Oh, and then plus Rawls. But because of how good Todd Gurley is and was, I'll rank them 2, and then Seattle 3 and San Francisco 4, with the caveat, because I do like Carlos Hyde in that Chip Kelly offense. I think that's going to be really, really dynamic. Or, you know, if it's not, then there's probably no help for Carlos Hyde or Chip Kelly.
So let's look at the receivers. I think we're going to agree at the top, but, you know, I think, and we're going to notice a trend, at least on the offensive side of the ball, as it should be. The Cardinals are going to be at the top or really near to the top on all of them. And there's a reason for that, because their offense was absolutely fantastic and they return everybody. So for receivers, I think, you know, the obvious ones to say the Cardinals are first when they've got their Larry Fitzgerald, John Brown, and Michael Floyd, and then, you know, throw in a J.J. Nelson. Behind them, Seattle. After that, San Francisco. And at the bottom, I say Los Angeles. Now, I don't think that the difference between Seattle and Arizona is as much as a lot of fans would think. They don't have the names, but my gosh, they do beat a lot of people. So the Arizona's got the better receiving core, and I think it's on the back of Larry Fitzgerald alone. Because when you look at the three that the, you know, between Curse, Baldwin, and Lockett, and you go Fitz, Floyd, and Brown, yeah, they've got a Floyd, they've got a Brown. What sets the Cardinals apart is simply Larry Fitzgerald. And for San Francisco over Los Angeles, for me, I'm not impressed with either one of those. It's simply because I like Torrey Smith a lot more than I like either Kenny Britt or Tavon Austin, even though there's talk in this offseason how Tavon Austin is going to get 100 catches, and that's only because they're going to, like, throw him the ball, you know, do shovel passes and throw him the ball 2 yards from the line of scrimmage and, you know, stuff. But I'm just not convinced of him as a big-time receiver. He can make plays, but if you're talking receivers, I mean, the Rams are still a mess.
They are, and you look at the 49ers depth chart, ugh, this is a mess too.
It is, but I like Torrey Smith much more than I like anybody they got on the Rams roster.
Right, but Torrey Smith, I keep hitting the wrong button, sorry. Torrey Smith is good, right? Like, he's probably in the Michael Floyd camp, but yeah, they didn't draft anybody that's very good either. Golly, these teams are terribly built. No wonder they're not successful anymore. But I don't know. I mean, I can't argue with you. Again, I think it's Arizona 1. Seattle's closer than Cardinals fans want to admit, and that's because Tyler Lockett may end up being the best receiver in the division within the next
– stop that.
So,
it's John Brown and J.J. Nelson. J.J. Nelson's going to be number one receiver, don't you know?
So I've literally had multiple people reach out to me about J.J. Nelson. Like, and because Chris Burke from SI wrote about it, PFF wrote about it. Why does everybody love J.J. Nelson this offseason? I'm like, I understand in Dynasty. Like, I get it in a Dynasty setting. Like, I think he's a nice stash for 2017 and beyond. But I just don't see where he makes any impact statistically in 2016, unless there's an injury. Like, I think that he can have big games like he did against Cincinnati, but I don't see any way that he has significant week-to-week impact without an injury occurring first. And in that case, you're basically, and again, this is in a fantasy setting, you're basically setting yourself up for failure in order to play him every week to see if you catch that lightning in the bottle the 1 week.
Right. And for me, Nelson is, you know, I said it all last year. We didn't think he was going to be on. I was shocked that they even had him on the field on offense. And he was impactful, but he was dumb as well because he, you know, as respected, there were several times he was in the right split. I don't know how many times I think he had limited snaps. And I think a third of them were him running the wrong route when he was throwing the ball. And so I've never seen him as more than a number four receiver ideal. And maybe he turns into a decent number three, but you know, even talking this year, you're talking a max of 40 catches. They might be big. They might be some fun ones, but he's not built to be a big time receiver. That what he have his best year was at 35, 40 catches in college at UAB. This is a tiny school. He's fast. He was an elite returner. That's why the Cardinals drafted him. He's super, super fast. So I think he's nothing more than a, you know, he's exciting. I don't think he's more than just a trick player.
No, and not right now. I think you got to remember Antonio Brown was never as small as J.J. Nelson. So let's, I mean, I hate bringing up names like that. Let's backtrack. No, Antonio Brown, his first year with Steelers, golly, why couldn't I think of that team's name? With the Steelers was really similar. Even his first 2 years, or no, his first year, that's what it was. His first year, he had 16 receptions for 167 yards and as many touchdowns as Jess and I had last year. So, I mean, that's just, you know, that was what he did in his first year. In his second year, though. So, and then our boy Nelson had 11 catches. That's all he had last year? My goodness, I could have sworn it was more than that. 11 catches for 299 yards. We'll call it an even 300. For 300 yards and two touchdowns. So if you're, you know, again, grain of salt, I'm not comparing them, but if you're talking about the archetype of careers, he's on a similar trajectory right now. The difference, the massive difference is the Pittsburgh wide receiver situation in 2011, Brown's second year, was Mike Wallace, a 35-year-old Hines Ward, and also second year Emmanuel Sanders. So it wasn't like they had a plethora of young talent in front of him, or a, you know, a Larry Fitzgerald that is only 32, I think, in front of him. We're talking, you know, Mike Wallace at his absolute apex, which was basically what John Brown is. And that's it. And so, I mean, the third leading receiver on that team for the Steelers was one Heath Miller. I don't think we'll see a Jermaine Gresham being the third leading receiver this year for the Arizona Cardinals. And if we do, Jess and I will have a lot of ranting on the websites.
Yes, we will. Let's look at the tight end situation. This is where, you know, maybe, you know, I think we're going to say that Seattle's probably got the most talent. Now, granted, Jimmy Graham, how he comes back after that injury, we don't know. But they've got Luke Wilson. Those two are probably on the same team, the two best tight ends in the division, I would say. But then the Cardinals right behind them, as underrated. I probably would call their tight end room very underrated. They're not going to be super productive, I don't think. But the combination of Darren Fells and Jermaine Gresham, that's a talented pair, a productive pair. But then behind them, I put San Francisco and Los Angeles because, you know, after I actually had to look because I know Jared Cook was gone. I'm like, who in the world does Los Angeles have? Oh, they've got Lance Kendrick. He's not bad. But I think every tight end on the roster, San Francisco, I still think would I take the two. Well, of course, they just drafted, what is his name? Higbee,
the racist.
Yeah, you said it. I didn't say it.
We don't know if he is. That was all alleged, but, you know.
That's going to go well in Los Angeles.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I say Seattle, Arizona, San Francisco, Los Angeles.
I think Seattle's won in this instance. This is barring health for Jimmy Graham if he comes back. But I think Luke Wilson, you know, would probably be good. Tight end one in Arizona, wouldn't he?
Yes, most certainly.
And another, you know, great draft pick, in my opinion, by them. I love Nick Vinette out of Ohio State. So I thought that was a nice pick for them. He'll end up not really playing much this year, barring health of Jimmy Graham. But I think he's a nice player. So I think that you'll see him in a couple of years. The problem the Cardinals have at tight end is that their tight ends need to do so much less work, stuff that grabs the headlines. So, you know, if you're talking in terms of receptions and production, I think San Francisco's too. If you're talking in terms of and you could probably put Los Angeles as three in that instance and have the Cardinals at the bottom. But I think in terms of blocking and things of that nature, I think it's Seattle one. I'm going to hedge Arizona two. Maybe that's a little homerish because I know how good Jermaine Gresham has been at blocking and the strides Darren Fells has made. And I honestly don't know enough about the San Francisco 49ers blocking schemes to tell you how good Vance McDonald has become. I know Garrett Celek's a good blocker, but Bruce Miller obviously has been a very solid player for them for a long time. But I think that's, you know, I think it's fair to have it right now. Seattle, Arizona, San Francisco, LA.
What if we called Larry Fitzgerald a tight end? Would that bump the Arizonas into number one over Seattle? I joke, kind of, because I've said this before. Larry Fitzgerald, the way he's used in Cardinals offense, is like so many tight ends, like a Jimmy Graham, for example. I think Larry Fitzgerald blocks more than Jimmy Graham and blocks better. Larry Fitzgerald gets used like a lot of tight. Like, take a Jason Witten, for example. Larry Fitzgerald is used like a tight end is in a lot of other traditional offenses. So I don't want to call him a tight end, but he's used like one.
Exactly. So I think it's fair, but then you have to take him out of the wide receiver ranks, and I think that makes Seattle better.
Yeah,
so
that is true. Offensive line. But let's put them in both just for fun, because then we can do whatever we want.
So, well, plus offensive it is line. Our ranking, so we can do whatever we want.
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, and who knows who's listening anyway, so take that, world. Right. Offensive line, we're going to wrap up the offense and with the offensive line. And this is one where the tide has turned so much, and I don't exactly know what to think of this division, because it used to be a black and blue division with great offensive lines. The Cardinals have the best offensive line in the division. I mean, they've got a really solid left tackle. They've got two Pro Bowl guards. They have an unproven center, and they've got a potentially really good right tackle. San Francisco's got a good left tackle, and then the Rams, now, they have line problems. They're really young, but if you look at it, they were really good at running the football, and they allowed one of the lowest number of sacks in the league. So the numbers
are
misleading.
Their offensive line is extremely young, but extremely effective.
Yes.
Right now. And you have to remember, they don't ask them to do nearly as much as what Arians ask. So if anything, they are used better in that instance for what their strengths are.
Yes. But in terms of talent, would you say that Arizona's got the best offensive line? I think we can say confidently that's the case now, which is really weird to say with the years and years of following the Cardinals.
I would say so. I mean, obviously it all hinges on the center to right tackle trio stepping up and becoming what we all expect them to be. But I think talent-wise, they're one. St. Louis is far and away two right now. And then it's a toss-up because, as you said, San Francisco has an older who might be the best in the division still, but they also, I don't know who I'm taking on that roster and putting over anybody in Arizona. I'm just looking at right now. Josh Garnett's going to be a good ball player, you know, yes. but that again, well, let's wait and see before we, you know, we put him anywhere else. Man, honestly, I have no idea like how to rank these last two teams.
Here's how I put it. Bradley Saul might be starting at left tackle. I don't think he will be, but he might start at left tackle for the Seahawks. That just puts it that puts them at the bottom for me. I mean,
yeah, I think
he's a good guy. You know, I think it's Bradley Saul, really good guy to have on your football team, really good guy. But as we saw him start for the Cardinals, and it was a disaster. I hope for his sake he's starting, and I hope for the Cardinals' sake that he starts for Seattle. But that tells you the type of line that they've got.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a good point.
And though, you know, I thought a little bit differently because of Staley. And you said, you know, yes, the Rams, their offensive line, young, effective. I still leaned over San Francisco over Los Angeles because of the talent of Staley and the potential of Garnett. Because, you know, well, I don't internet scout. I read what other people say and then I form an opinion based on that. People I know and that I know and have paid attention to love Garnett, and I think that will show. That and the Chip Kelly offense, and again, that allows them to make some quick decisions so it's not burdening the offensive line as much, and they can put up numbers while having a bad offensive line. That said, I think with Staley and Garnett, I say the more talented line is San Francisco's over Los Angeles. They'll give me in another year from now, I think Los Angeles overtakes them because they finally get the continuity and the reps. And they do have potential on that line. They've got potential. They've got some good talent on there. They just were really young. And you know, but they run a really simple offense.
Honestly, I like what they've built on their offensive line. It's something that we've seen the Cardinals do recently and something I wish the Cardinals would have done, obviously, sooner. Obviously, you know, wanting the Wisenhunt era to involve offensive line picks would then mean no Bruce Arians era, so never mind. So we'll just... Yeah, whatever.
So let's move on. Next on the Rise Up Say Red podcast, we're going to talk to the defensive side of the ball. And we might see I think where Arizona was near the very top of every category on the offense, that's not going to be quite the case on defense. We're back on the Rise Up Say Red podcast, and we're continuing to rank the NFC West in terms of position groups. But now we move to the defensive side of the ball. And this one's a little bit more fun, at least in my rankings. The Cardinals, in fact, are not in my rankings, not number one in any defensive group. Defensive line and linebacker are a little bit tricky for me because you've got 2-4-3 teams and you got 2-3-4 teams. And, you know, that makes the rating the line a little bit different because they do different things. Nonetheless, I think without question, we have to say that the Rams have the cream of the crop when it comes to offensive line. They are so physical up front. And when you have an Aaron Donald, and then you've got the edge rushers that they've got, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. The reality is they're just so talented on the front four. And even, you know, if you put the Cardinals front three and we're doing depth charts and, you know, looking at all of this overall, you know, and the way I do things in this instance is, like I said, you know,
we probably should go interior and edge, but you know,
I think you're okay. Cause I think if I was to say I have the Cardinals defensive lineman and the Rams defensive lineman, or even the Cardinal, and you put Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden in there as well. And you said, I get to pick who's starting. My starters are Robert Quinn, Aaron Donald, Michael Bennett, and probably Calais. So that means you have only one Cardinal on there. So I think that's a fair way to say that St. Louis is better.
Now, I have Seattle over Arizona. Would you put Arizona second, or do you put Seattle second? I still think that Seattle line, the way they just keep churning out linemen that are really good. They still got Averill. They still got Bennett. It's an incredibly talented line. Even though they've lost talent, they continue to play at a high level. You could tell that they lost a little bit last year overall.
That's why they addressed it so much the last two drafts.
And they're still one of the best defenses, and it's based on their line. It's based on their front seven first and foremost.
Yeah, and so I think when you look at it, I would say if you're just talking starters, I would take the Cardinals starters over the Seattle starters, with the caveat that whatever happens with Jerron Reed and the continued growth of Frank Clark, Seattle's defensive line could begin to compete with St. Louis's for not just tops in the division, but tops in the NFL. I mean, you're talking about if Jerron Reed and Frank Clark continue to blossom. Obviously, Frank Clark's the only reason he ended up being available to Seattle was because he's a knucklehead off the field. And then Jerron Reed is just he's a very one-dimensional player.
But he will play that one dimension really well.
Exactly, extremely well. So I think you're talking about the potential to be better with the caveat that I think the starters on Arizona are better. Does that make sense?
Sure, sure.
So that's just because Ruben and Hill don't really do anything for me. But you know what? If you ask the Seattle person, they would say the same thing about Corey Peters and Frosty Rucker.
Exactly.
So that's they would be more like, why isn't Robert Kimdiche starting?
Well, so, in a couple of years, that Cardinals line could be every bit as dominant among the starters, because if you've got Kimdiche and Rodney Gunter on that line in the front three, that could potentially be really, really devastating. But
it could.
But we're still, I mean, what we have for me with the Cardinals being third is that they play effectively and they play within their scheme. And I think a lot of that is simply because of the three-man setup that they use. And so it kind of devalues a little bit of what they do because they get a lot of numbers and then they expect their pressure to come from the edge and they get lots of tackles and from a Deion Buchanan. And so I like the talent that Seattle has more overall. I think the potential in a year or two is the Cardinals could surpass them, especially with the dynamic abilities and athleticism of Gunter and Kimdiche. And then at the very end, and this isn't a slight, San Francisco's got a talented defensive line. It's just a little young. They didn't make the transition from Justin Smith all that well. So they didn't have the step up that they needed. But, you know, when it comes to 6'7" Oregon players, they've kind of got the market there. And
they've cornered the market on on that type of player.
Yeah, let's talk linebackers. Again, this is kind of scheme dependent. Again, where the Cardinals play with four linebackers, or if you want to call Deion Buchanan three linebackers and a safety pretending to be a linebacker. The 49ers run four linebackers while Seattle and Los Angeles run with three. That said, who's your number one linebacking core in the division?
Seattle. That's got to be Seattle.
Got to be with KJ Wright in there and
Bobby Wagner.
They're so good. They are so good. And it doesn't matter who they have in the other spot. That's the thing. It doesn't really matter.
No, exactly. And that player has been – I mean, that player ended up being a Super Bowl MVP. You know, that player that was in that other spot. He's not even on the team anymore. So, again, does it matter? Probably not. Two is where it gets interesting because after that, I think it's San Francisco because I think they still have the best player – in Bowman, but you can sell me on Arizona. You could sell me, but I would probably go San Francisco too, just because Bowman, again, playing the game. If you are starting your linebackers, you're going Bobby Wagner one, Navarro Bowman two. I at least to me,
right. And then that makes sense to me. And I had San Francisco just ahead of Arizona. Chandler Jones' addition really helps them. I mean, Arizona's got two great players with Chandler Jones and Deion Buchanan. They've got a Kevin Minter replaceable, and then you've got Marcus Golden potential. But San Francisco, they still got Aaron Lynch on the edge. They've got Ahmad Brooks. They've got Michael Wilhoit. They've got Navarro Bowman. So they've got a linebacking core that I think still across the board is just a little bit better. If I look at those two teams, Navarro Bowman's number one, obviously. I probably want Deion Buchanan on the in that line. If I have to pick four, Deion Buchanan. I'd take Will Hoyt over. I'd take Bowman over everyone. Then I'd take Buchanan. I'd take Will Hoyt over. I take Will Hoyt over Minter. I think I take Chandler Jones and I take Aaron Lynch. And so it's just it's a little bit better. And then it's Los Angeles linebacker core. I mean, they've got an Alec Ogletree. But after that, there's not a lot in terms for me. Then Mark Barron, who's there doing Buchanan. There, nothing about their linebacking core really scares me. And Ogletree's good. But they don't need really anyone great back there with the line that they have in front of them.
Exactly. So, you know, they've invested in and paid their defensive line. And they run a 4-3, so they need, you know, one great linebacker. It's just happenstance that Seattle has one great linebacker and then one really good linebacker, whereas in a 3-4 defense you need, you need two great, you know, great linebackers to compete. So
cornerback, I still got Seattle at the top. I like Patrick Peterson more than I like Richard Sherman, but I wouldn't necessarily, one is better than the, I wouldn't, they're both basically 1A and 1B. But after that, I like Seattle's depth with Jeremy Lane. Justin Bethel still is a question mark. You know, if we're taking Tyrann Mathieu at the corner, that's cool. But, you know, the corner depth outside of Patrick Peterson is real questionable. The talent is high. Seattle I like better. And for me, Los Angeles is close because they've got E.J. Gaines and they've got Tremaine Johnson. They aren't very – they almost bump past Arizona for me this year. If you're just looking at their corner rotation.
Yeah, I would go Seattle, Arizona. I think San Francisco is a kind of a dumpster fire right now.
That's why I didn't even mention them.
So I think it would go Seattle, Arizona, St. Louis. I want to see more from the St. Louis safeties more than anything. Los Angeles. Yeah, okay. Whatever. it's gonna be all year. You're just gonna have to correct me all season. So but yeah. You know, I think yeah, I go Seattle 1, Arizona 2, Los Angeles. Look, I even had to stop and think about it. Los Angeles 3 and then San Francisco somewhere between 16 and 20.
and safety, I don't think there's any question when you've got Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. Seattle is still the cream of the crop at safety.
Well, especially since we don't know what Tyrann Mathieu is going to be. Exactly. And then all the projections, and I wanted to ask you this before we left tonight, since we're kind of at the end here. I want to ask you this. What is your thought that every projection has Tony Jefferson starting over Tyvon Branch?
I don't know. I see. Well, maybe it's because of what he plays. I think Tyvon Branch is going to be a really big rotation guy. From what I saw right now, he is the Tyrann Mathieu, but he comes in to play slot, and I think they love his versatility. So I think maybe just maybe, if Tyrann Mathieu is healthy, that Tony Jefferson, at least early on, is the main starter. And I think that might simply be because this will be his fourth year in the system and he knows the defense better. I don't think it will be long before Branch becomes the starter along Mathieu. And I think, you know, ideally that's what they want because that gives them speed in the back end. And Branch can play anywhere. They could even line him up at outside. So he can play, he could day safety free. They could play back end. He can play up in the box. He can play slot. In fact, I kind of like what they've done in terms of if Matthew's not ready. So if Matthew's not ready, they've got three guys in Branch and Jefferson and even Swearinger. Swearinger becomes their third safety, but comes in like Tony Jefferson did it a year ago, and Branch plays in the slot. I don't know though. I'm going to assume, I'm just going to go with the assumption. I went with the assumption it's going to be Matthew. It's going to be a three-man rotation of Matthew, Branch, and Jefferson. And even this Matthew Branch, if it's Matthew Branch, I have them ever, I mean, I have them slightly ahead of Anton Bethea, who's just old, and Eric Reed, who's really good in terms of San Francisco.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
And then the safety position in Los Angeles, again, that's kind of like the cornerback position in San Francisco. They really don't even – I think they have listed on their roster. I'll have to double check. I think they only have actually listed two safeties, and the rest are – I mean, let me check. I was looking down up and down the roster. They got Maurice Alexander. They've got T.J. McDonald. And they are technically the only safeties listed on their roster.
Check out the tweet I just sent on T.J. McDonald. So you'll have to check that out. But, yeah, I mean, they have a guy named Cody Davis. I think that's a fake name. and then T.J. McDonald, like you said. And McDonald's a good player, don't get me wrong. Like, he's a nice player. But, I mean, he's not anybody, again. He's D.J. Swearinger-ish. He's probably better than D.J. Swearinger, but, I mean, I think that's where I, you know, put him in that instance.
And then let's look at the specialists and the coaches. If we're talking about the specialist kicker, punter, I think this one is clear. I have Arizona at the bottom. You know, in terms of kickers, Chandler Catanzaro's, he's fine. But Drew Butler, if there's a punter, if I had to pick any of the punters in the NFC West, I pick all of them except for Butler. And that's not because I dislike Butler, but I think they're just more talented everywhere else. Seattle, with between Hauschka and Ryan, they're still at the top. They're guaranteed they're going to get a great punt off, and they're going to hit their field goals. And for me, San Francisco, yes, they've got old man Dawson, but they've got a really young, big-legged guy in Bradley Pinion. Hecker and Zuerlein, I think I would still pick them over the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think that there's a ton to debate. And the fact that, you know, it's been taken, you know, the return game is so hard now to justify. I like Bruce Ellington as a return man. The Cardinals, we don't know who's going to return kicks and punts now, because it's not going to be David Johnson. I mean,
kickoffs don't even matter. I think it's going to be J.J. Nelson.
Maybe on a special occasion in like a we have to score on this kickoff type of situation. But I think Tavon Austin's the best return man in the division now, wouldn't you say?
Maybe. I mean, Lockett's. I mean, they've really got some good ones. Lockett. You've got Lockett, you've got Austin, you've got Ellington, and you've got Nelson. So, you know, I think pretty much in the return game, the potential is there's a wash there. So I look at the kickers and punters. If you had a kicker, I want Hauschka first. If I have a punter, I want Ryan first. If I had to pick a punter, I'd always pick Drew Butler last. And I think...
Sorry, it's just always funny.
and in terms of the kickers... I'm not sure where I put Catanzaro. I think he's an above-average kicker. I don't think he's a great kicker. But for what the Cardinals do, he has the potential to grow into a really good one, but he's not great yet.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that. Coaches,
you can start.
I'll go last.
I take Arians Carroll, but only by that very much, and it's basically a toss-up, and I think it's more Homer than anything. I like Arians just that much better than Carroll. And then after that, I take Chip Kelly because he's had more success recently than Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher, I think he's still living on the success from 15 years ago and hasn't done anything really since. So Arians over Carroll, Kelly over Fisher. But Kelly over Fisher, that's not even close for me.
So I'm going to go Carroll, Arians, Kelly, Fisher, and I'll just leave it at that. Win a Super Bowl. That'll be mine.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Because the reality is every best season that you can point out for Arians, Pete Carroll's had a better season.
Right.
So that's true. That would be why. That would be the only reason why.
Yeah, you could take the totality. Well, granted, he had his head coaching stuff. I mean, he was a great head coach at USC. You know, Arians went to three Super Bowls with the Steelers, was offensive coordinator for two of them, won a ring with one of them. And, you know, but still, yeah, for my money, I still like right now, I think, you know, Arians is the hotter commodity right now. So I give him the slightest edge over Carroll. I completely understand why Carroll would be taken over after he's got a ring and he's been to two Super Bowls. It's, you know, he's weird, but, you know, so is Arians. And then I had to say, like, why is Jeff Fisher still coaching? I don't know. I don't get that.
Exactly.
So that should, with you that there. In the end, I think it's rather clear that this season will be a season of the Cardinals and the Seahawks duking it out. It could go either way, Cardinals or Seahawks at the top of the division. And really either way, 49ers, Rams duking it out to be terrible because Los Angeles, they lost talent on defense and that was their strength. And now they have less certainty at quarterback. I mean, if they're going to go with Jared Goff, they're going to take their lumps. San Francisco, Chip Kelly has shown that he can, you know, they can might be able to. I don't know what to think about them, but you know, he has some track record. Yes, he ruined the Eagles, but before that, he was good. I mean, he had some good teams going. He just ruined it. So Seattle and, you know, kind of how much the rankings went, Seattle and Arizona at the top and San Francisco and Los Angeles duking it out for the bottom. Anything else worth talking about before we close?
No, I think we're going to see a nice, you know, uptick of content and, you know, what's available for Cardinals fans. So I'd really recommend Cardinals fans, you know, make sure that you have Cards Wire at USA Today and Revenge of the Birds both posted, because the reality is Jess and I talk and we do try and not do too much of the same stuff. So, you know, because we do want to give you guys as much content to digest as possible. I've already linked quite a few of Jess's articles on Revenge of the Birds because they're good articles, especially that running back one. That was some good information you got there. So, but you know, there's so much content and the growth of the Cardinals and the steps that they're taking. I really think it's going to be a good overall season for content and growth of Cardinals fans. And honestly, with All or Nothing starting, I don't think that there's going to be enough content out there for people interested in the Cardinals.
And I was laughing simply because Seth's plugging that running back. I stole his information. He put it on Twitter, and I took it and put it into an article. David Johnson doesn't have to do much to have himself a kind of record-setting season or put in the record books. That was all Seth's work, and, you know, I double-checked a couple of things and put it into words. So
no, I wasn't going to do it. That was all you, buddy. I'm okay with that. So, but yeah, I mean, Jess and I are friends away from the sites and things of that nature and the podcast. And so, you know, we are going to work to make sure that there's not a ton of crossover content. News and such is going to be news and such. There's not much, you know, we can do about that, but
takes are a little bit different because we do see things from slightly different perspectives, which is awesome. I mean, we didn't vary much on our rankings here tonight, but yeah. Oh well.
Yeah, but that. But let's be honest. There's two really good teams, and then there's two really giant question marks. I wouldn't even say they're bad. They're just question marks. They could be bad. They could be okay. I wouldn't say they're going to be good next year either team, but I think they can be okay.
So that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. That's Seth Cox from RevengeOfBirds.com. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire. You can find the podcast on either one of our sites. It is coming soon. I don't know if it's already there, but we're going to be featured on sports360az.com as well. The site, the podcast is on Blog Talk Radio / Rise Up Sea Red on Facebook and on Twitter with Rise Up Sea Red as the handles and the websites. That's Seth Cox again. I'm Jess Root. Thank you all for listening. We're going to talk all or nothing our next show, and go Cards.
Have a good night, everybody.